3-0, entity of 212, complex.
DPS, go. Inco, go. PUS, go. Surgeon, go. Booster, go. Copy that, we have a go from you guys.
This is Talking Sound.
I saw my face, and I must stand me up. I saw my face.
Well, hello everybody, and welcome to the Talking Sound Podcast, the only podcast on the internet where negative 10 is a number to be desired. My name is Chris Jordan. We are coming to you actually live from the road, quite literally, from Houston to Austin, back to home base. And I thought it was apropos to take a minute and sit back and reflect on the show that we actually just got finished watching all of a few hours ago, the Marvel Universe spectacular that is touring the nation right now. And ladies and gentlemen, if you have not had a chance to go out and see this show when it's come to your town. From my understanding, it's supposed to be going on another year, if not going on international next year. It is absolutely phenomenal. And the main reason that I wanted to talk about this show is because I'm a geek, man. And to go out and see a show like that, you know, every once in a while we talk about my roots and where I come from and what it is that brought me to a career in the industry of music, recording, and podcasting, things like that. And one of them is live theater. I found a love for live theater. I remember my mother took me when I was a young child to a live production in Houston at the Alley Theater, as a matter of fact, of The King and I. And I was blown away. Like, the depth of the production and the story and everything else probably escaped me at the time, and I'll admit that. However, what got me was the production, man. The lights, the music, the high drama. It was amazing. It was like watching a movie, but being inside of it. And to go out for me and see a show like the Marvel Universe tour that's happening was absolutely phenomenal. I took my nephew, Andrew, for his birthday, and his brother, Nathan, as well as my good friend, Billy, and his daughter, and my brother as well. And we all had a great time. It was a romp. We're all comic book freaks. Every one of us. I spent my time in high school on weekends going out to comic conventions and getting things signed, stuff like that. And my brother was an addict as well. We have since addicted his young children. The Marvel Universe movies, the three of us are all about. It's all things that we've been waiting to see since we were in high school. And now that they're happening, it's absolutely phenomenal. Hold on, I've got to slow down here. I've actually got a police officer on the right, just making sure he isn't coming for me here. So, all right. Got to respect the state troopers, ladies and gentlemen. They work hard for their money and work hard to keep us all safe. So, anyway, back to it. The geek out is just phenomenal. It is absolutely amazing to me, the things that they do with that show. And when I was in high school doing tech theater and learning my way around a soundboard and all of that kind of stuff, you know, I never would have dreamed that a production like that would have been possible on a stage. And number two, well, granted, more of an arena because of what it is. It's a large stunt show, in case you haven't seen any of the trailers or heard about it. It's basically the concept is a mystic cube has come about, and Loki, the evil character from the Thor movies, Thor's brother, is trying to get control of this so that he can bring about destruction of mankind in the world and bring about chaos. So Thor breaks it into a bunch of fractals, into a bunch of pieces, and the whole mission is to reassemble these things so that they can save the X-Men and be able to defeat Loki. So now that you have the backstory, see, as a geek, I have to give you the backstory. It's, you know, to go and see something like that, to see the lasers and hear the sound system, and then to know that I know the technical crew, that, you know, my friends are the ones running the projection and doing sound cues and all of that kind of stuff is absolutely phenomenal. I mean, the tech that was involved was amazing. They were doing not full-on holographic projection, but some really, really cool stuff with scrims and things like that, where they projected the Statue of Liberty's face on a scrim and had her crown up as the top of the scrim. And there was action going on outside of it, you know, high drama and, you know, people fighting and explosions and stuff. And then it'd go dark outside and the inside of it would light up with just her face on it. And there was another fight going on in a ramp inside. And then whenever the lights had come back up, motorcycle fights would be going on, and explosions and lasers, and it was absolutely incredible. I mean, look at me. This is exactly why I wanted to do the episode right now, because I am absolutely enthused by it and just utterly geeked out. I can't explain how much fun it was to go and just get lost in a live production. It's, you know, it's one thing to go out and see a movie, but whenever you see characters live on stage, and granted, you know, it's not like true theater where, you know, the characters are saying every single line, you know, it's so choreographed that literally it has to be backtracked, you know, but at the same time, to know that all of that backtracking, to know that every bit of that audio cues, the video cues, everything is run off of SMPTE. It's all run off of like Ableton type software where, you know, once they hit go, everybody's there as a fireman to make sure it's there, but it's all on autopilot. You know, you're basically there to make sure that scenes run right. And if there is a hiccup, you roll over to a backup system. And if something's getting hiccuped inside the system and you can't do anything about it, you literally skip the scene and move on to the next, you know? And it's very easy to get that information to the actors. But to be able to get that information to everybody in a crew and make sure that it happens on time and right is pretty hard. So to automate the system is really the only way, especially whenever you're doing it from venue to venue, place to place, you're only in each location for a few days, maybe a week max. You know, I know that they were in Houston, I think, for a couple of weeks, in Texas for all of a month, but it's really phenomenal, the things that are going on with it. Like, as someone who grew up doing theater and being active in theater and doing tech for theater, you know, you get used to things like spot cues and, you know, aligning your lighting for different scenes and, you know, having dramatic changeovers of lights and stuff, and you're there doing it manually on a board, or even if it's programmed into something like a hog, you know, a DMX hog or a hog 2, something like that. Some sort of automatic interface where it's programmed in and it's running scenes for you. You know, you've still got faders in front of you. And it's interesting, like, you know, whenever I told my brother and my buddy Billy that after some research and finding out that the lighting in that was all automated, and that each actor basically had a gimbaled, moving head projection beam that was assigned to them, and on that moving head was an infrared camera, and they all wore an infrared homing beacon that was a specific beacon that tied to that camera, so that no matter what, even if they had to change cues and go somewhere different, or even if they had to step 3 feet to the side to make sure that that motorcycle didn't hit them, their light was still there automatically without error every single time. And, you know, the technology to do that, the programming to do that is just phenomenal. It's absolutely amazing. And, you know, to know that that is where it's come. And I'm coming on 40 years this year. You know, I'm coming on not as an audio engineer, but in life total. And to know that I still in my mother's garage having Commodore 64 and an Apple IIe, you know, but in that amount of time that we've gone from halogen lights to LED lights to, you know, moving headlights to digital programming, and then to the point of full automation of a show. And the rig, the show took place in Houston at what's now the NRG Stadium, right next to the Reliant Arena and everything there where the Houston Texans play, right in the shadow of the Astrodome, the eighth wonder of the modern world, and a true testament to architecture and really what Houston was all about, just big, big things. And the Energy Stadium is neat because it's really a conference hall. It's got a retractable roof in it, you know, so like they can park blimps, things like that in there. And, you know, to know that they had to come in and black out the entire ceiling, they had to have a crew come in and literally tie black cloth to the entire ceiling to black it out for the lights and the projection. And then at the same time, you know, be able to downsize their rig. From what I understood and gathered, it was a 1 to 2/3 size rig. It wasn't full size, but the still incorporated like a good 16 projectors and, you know, just things everywhere. It had an automated dolly track that, you know, carried actors around that actually, you know, Spider-Man would be whipping around on his web, but his web was actually a steel cable suspended from that. And it would be swinging him around while he's doing Spider-Man poses and things like that. And then on another dolly track, you know, Green Goblin comes out and, you know, they're both fighting on Green Goblin's sled, and it's just, it's intense and it's wild. And to sit there and see the sense of wonder in these children's eyes while it goes on, and just absolutely be into it on all levels. I mean, the story was straight out of a Saturday morning cartoon version of a comic. It was, you know, like I said, high drama. The only way I remember my ex at one point asked me, you know, and I forget what movie it was we were watching, one of the X-Men movies, and Magneto came up and she was like, wait a minute, did Magneto go away in the last one? I'm like, yeah, he's back. Like, welcome to comic books. That's how they work. You know, no one's ever really dead. Superman died, and guess what? Four different Supermen came back, and one of them was real. So, you know, I mean, it's basically, comic books are soap operas with higher drama and a lot of action and explosions and outer space and mutant powers and things like that that guys like. So they're pretty much soap operas made for men. That's what comic books are. And we tie into them. I'm not saying just men, but everyone ties into them whenever we're young, in our teens, things like that, because of the tie lines of the stories. You know, the fact that most of these mutant powers, most of these experiences come about to people when they're in their early teens, early 20s, those awkward years where they're trying to figure things out. And, you know, we really lock into those stories and they become something that's an intrinsic part of us, you know. Even now in the Talking Podcast studio, there at Austin Music Rooms in Austin, there is a Spider-Man banner hanging up from Todd McFarlane from 1991, I believe it's dated on there, and it's lived in every room when I went to the seminary, when I went to college, when I went to Maine. It's even now in Austin, it has been in every room that I've ever lived in since I bought it. And it's in that room now in a nice place of honor. So it's, these shows bring about a childlike mentality that really wrap you up in the storyline. And then the way that it moves across the stage is just so well orchestrated that it's fantastic. Like I said, high drama. It's phenomenal. And the incorporation of all of the technology from video mapping, you know, half of the set is video, more than half of the set, I would say three quarters of the set is video mapped. It's basically some geometric forms and things like that that are placed strategically around for the motorcycles to be able to ramp onto, for the actors to be able to climb, things like that. And, you know, everything, all of the content is video mapped onto them from the ceiling and the sides, and it really creates an encompassing environment. And the first time that I saw this kind of thing really happening was actually at the Alley Theater once again, except it was years later. This was probably around 2010, something like that. And I was there doing some technical work for Wonderland, the official release of the musical version of Alice in Wonderland. It was a great production. It was fantastic. It was out of Florida, and it teched in Florida, then came and opened an alley, like so many musicals do. You know, Jekyll and Hyde was one that did that. They're a really nurturing environment there, and really launch a lot of shows that go on to be something special. And, you know, it was interesting because they had, as the backdrop, you know, they had sets and things like that that moved around. But in addition to that, they had a scrim, and behind the scrim was a projected onto the scrim were two Christies stacked on top of each other that provided digital, you know, projection mapping. And then behind that was also a 100-foot by 60-foot, if I'm not mistaken, LED wall. A big pixel wall that also had content. So between the two of those, it created almost this 3D illusion, and that took the place of typical scenic backdrops that you would normally have in a traditional play. And it really made for a great marriage of technology. So, like I said, it really takes me back to my roots. As much rock and roll and corporate audio video, really more rock and roll that I do nowadays is more live recording, things like that. But the technical aspect of pulling all of those cues off and getting that done and doing it every night reminds me a lot of when I was on broadcast and what it was to have a crew of people running a live internet feed with three cameras, three video feeds from computer for graphics, a live host, live audio, callers calling in, you know, guests on the line, guests on Skype. You do a 3-hour broadcast, edit it 15 minutes after the show, upload it, and you're done, and bam, man, you know, you just saw the numbers, and there are 3 million people that listened, and you pulled that show off immaculately. There was not a problem at all. And there's no feeling like it. And to sit there and talk to my friends after the show and see the smiles on their faces and see how much fun they have with it all the time, every time, is just great, you know. And were I not a married man, I would be on the road with them and doing it. But I absolutely love my life in Austin. I love the podcast. I love everybody here. So I choose to be at home and hold down the fort for those guys and review a show like that that is going around the country and soon to be around the world and is right now the largest stunt show in the world. And some of the things that they are pulling off that they're doing are absolutely phenomenal. The lasers involved are great. And to see the kids whenever they go off and the explosions and the pyrotechnics, and, you know, it would be a little bit more intimate if it were in a theater environment. But at the same time, there's no way that you could have the experience that you have in a theater environment. It's got to be in the round like it is. It's in a three-quarter round environment. So you actually get the opportunity to see everything. Action is all-encompassing the stage. And it reminds me a lot of whenever I went to theaters in ancient Greece, things like that, where it was the amphitheater was almost all the way around because it pulls you into the action that way. And to be right up close, you know, to be able to, if you've ever been to a monster truck show or anything like that, you know, you kind of get wrapped up in it because you start smelling the fumes. And it's like, you know, you start smelling the fumes of a few stunt bikes and stuff like that. And, you know, the smell of rubber squeaking on the ground. And, you know, you get into it and then you hear the kids, yeah, get him. And, you know, it's absolutely fantastic. It's great. And it reminds me of why I got into this industry is the childhood, like, innocent thrill. And I explain it to my wife. She asks me all the time, the studio at home, you know, I'm always snapping shots of the podcast studio, though I don't do it as much with the podcast studio at Austin Music Rooms, where I rearrange things. It's getting to where it's more of a static environment now. We are looking at upgrading some gear, things like that. But in the home studio, it's definitely much more of a workflow thing, and it depends on what I'm doing. And, you know, I have a large command console with two racks and synthesizers and mastering gear, all kinds of stuff. So things get rearranged in those racks every once in a while, and they get rerouted on the push buttons for patching on the patch bay. Right there's my workbench, and that gets rearranged. And she's like, why do you do that? And I'm like, number one, it's a workflow issue. You know, if I'm doing something and I'm going to be working on a project for the next couple weeks, you know, and this is how I'm going to need it arranged, it's better for me to just do this than it is for me to patchwork it and kind of, yeah, get it done, you know. So I will actually go through the effort and I'll spend a day, and look at my smile as I say it, spend a day with my gear and tech it out, you know, and flow it out. How am I going to need it? How am I going to want it? Because number one, I love it. I love it. I love patching cables. I love setting up gear. Quite honestly, one of my favorite things in the world is untangling cables. It is such a zen relaxation exercise for me. So I will actually spend a day rewiring the studio, getting it ready, getting it prepped. And it kind of gets my mind ready, you know. That way it's not just, oh, let's hop into work and let's switch gears. It's a preparation for the work that's going to come. And it's part of the process for me. I recommend that to people. Not everybody's as organic with it as I am. I do a little bit of editing in the digital realm on audio, things like that. I do multi-tracking, but most of my recording and things like that for personal use is quite honestly done on analog. It's all done on tape. So for me, it's very much analog, patching cables together through a patch bay, moving knobs, seeing things move on a meter process than it is, let's pop it into a digital console and, you know, tweak around with it with a mouse and a monitor. That's still fun too, but it's not nearly as fun for me. So, yeah, the live theater aspect of shows like that really harkens me back to, like I said, why I got into this, the roots of my joy in it. And whenever I wire that stuff on, and every time I push the on button and I see all those lights come on and the meters kick over to the right and then settle back down and start to glow and the tubes warm up, you know, and it's just, it's a giddy thrill. It's a giddy thrill. It reminds me of when I was about 8 or 9 years old, and, you know, it wasn't a huge invention that I would make, but I would wire something and it would at least turn on. It may not have worked, but it turned on. And there was that, whoo, that eureka moment where, oh, geez, there it is, there it is. It's right there. It's right there. And it's so close. And that's the moments that I live for. That's the moments that I love. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is what I loved about this Marvel Universe tour that's happening right now. If you have a chance, go out and see it. Marvel Universe Live, world's largest stunt show right now on wheels. And I'm telling you, you will not regret it. It's great. I've heard from about 3 or 4 different adults that I know who actually went out and saw it on their own without children. And they loved it. They loved it, loved it. So on that note, you know, while you're online buying tickets for the Marvel Universe Live, please stop on by the website, www.talkingsoundshow.com. There you can see all of the articles. You can see the guest interviews, our guest pages, where you can see their links to their websites, the episodes that they've been on. You can also see all of the videos, the tech articles. We have industry news from major manufacturers on there as well. In addition to that, you can also visit our Patreon page from the website, www.patreon.com/talkingsoundshow, and that will take you to our fundraisers. There, you know, you can help support us through the monthly maintenance campaign. Right now, we are so close to halfway for our release of the Talking Sound app, where all of the podcast audio, video, articles, everything will be available right in your pocket, mobily. As an app user, you'll get specified things that are only for the app. You'll get alerts, all kinds of stuff. And also on the app, you will be able to connect to us to our SoundCloud, soundcloud.com/talkingsoundpodcast, and spreaker.com/talkingsoundshow. There you can listen to all of the episodes in the last month or so, and come by, join us, visit us online, be our friends, like us on the Facebooks, all that kind of stuff. And please, everybody, if you're on the road, drive carefully. And until next time, please keep reaching for 11. We'll talk to you soon. Take care and have a great day. Bye-bye. Pushing up those broken fingers. Only way to find out who you are. In a town.